Hello, and thanks for checking out the podcast edition of our classroom project we call the For Got Tonya Project. So in class, we've been discussing the gender gap and how it impacts For Got Tonya. To help inform this discussion, we've been talking with key people in our community to gain insights about their experience with gender inequality, gender stereotypes, and expectations society places on women as a child, as a parent, and in the workplace. So on this edition, Brianna Gorsuch and Caitlin Patterson, both juniors at Cuba High School, sit down with the recently retired and 2015 Business Person of the Year, Carol Davis. Carol is the former director of the Spoon River College Foundation, but her impact to our community goes much beyond Spoon River College, including being a founding member and former president of the Spoon River Partnership for Economic Development, who is instrumental in recruiting the Cook Group to come to Canton, Illinois. Carol was also a former educator in the Elmwood School District and former executive director of the Canton Chamber of Commerce. Recently, she founded her own company, Tenacious Inc., which provides support for small business and nonprofit organizations. And finally, on a more personal note, Carol is an avid theater and music lover who serves as the director of the Spoon River College Community Course and director of music at the Canton Church of the Brethren. She's a huge St. Louis Cardinal baseball fan. She grew up in St. Louis, which is hard for me to hear as a Cubs fan, but we decided to continue the interview regardless. But perhaps most importantly, Carol is a cancer survivor who views every day as a gift. We hope you enjoy listening to Brianna and Caitlin's interview with Carol, as well as be challenged by the insights she has gathered from her experience working in For Got Tonya. A little forewarning in case you have small kids around listening, our conversation turns just a little PG-13 towards the end as Carol courageously shares one of the tougher experiences she's had working at a law office as a young lady. Although it's tough to hear, we think it's one of the most important parts of our conversation that people, especially young women, need to hear. So with that said, here is Brianna and Caitlin with the lovely Carol Davis.
Okay, so first off, please tell us a little about yourself, your career, and what you enjoy about living in our area.
Okay, well, first of all, I was born in St. Louis, Missouri, proper. And then when I was six, we moved out to the suburbs. And we moved out to an area that was the most highly populated in the St. Louis area at that time. As a matter of fact, I'm sure you guys with Mr. Brewer have talked about things like that have happened in Ferguson, Missouri. Well, that is attached to Hazelwood and Florissant, where I grew up. So just literally like driving 3 minutes down the road and I would be in Ferguson. I am a child of the late 60s and the early 70s. So everything that has happened to me in my life has kind of been colored by the experiences that I had and being in a very large city. We were a part of the movements of that time. I had very long hair that was ironed. I wore black armbands and protested the Vietnam War, things like that. But when I went to Hazelwood High School, and I mentioned this to you guys on the walk down, but I'll reiterate that. My high school just had sophomores through seniors. The school district was a 60-mile radius, and there were 5,000 of us in the one building. We had all kinds of different offerings and things like that, but it was very crowded. So right after I left, the year after I graduated, they actually built two more schools, and it became three schools. I always thought that I would just grow up to be a secretary. When I was a kid, I loved playing with index cards and, you know, pins and putting all kinds of things together. And that seemed to be an okay thing because that's one of the accepted jobs for women when you got older. Neither one of my parents had gone to college and I was an only child. But when I was in high school, the end of my senior year, I participated in a program that was known as, I think they called it DECA back then, but basically I went to school 1 hour and then I drove downtown St. Louis and I had the opportunity to work at this glorious 30-person Jewish law firm right in the heart of downtown St. Louis. And there were 29 men and one female lawyer at that time. And I was I was going to be a legal secretary. It was very exciting. But something that happened to me that changed my life is one of the attorneys, the one who was my supervisor, one day came and sat at my desk and he said, "What do you want to do with your life?" And I said, "Well, I love being a secretary." And he said, "I'm sorry, that's unacceptable." He said, "I want you to go to Radcliffe." Now, Radcliffe at the time was one of the most prestigious women's colleges around. I didn't decide to go to Radcliffe, but I did decide to go to the University of Missouri. And that was a very late decision. I hadn't had any money saved up for it. My parents were shocked. But that made a huge difference in my life, just from this one man making the right suggestion for me. And we're going to be talking about gender, and it's unusual that a man at that time would have said to a woman, "You're more than what you think you are." So I went to Mizzou, and eventually I went to Illinois State University, and I went back to Mizzou. I have a bachelor's degree and two master's degrees, one in education and the other one in theater. But I moved to Canton in 1982, and I taught at Elmwood High School. And I have some interesting stories that I'll tell you about that a little bit later, and in a way I'll actually get to make a little bit of fun of Mr. Brewer when I tell you my story at Elmwood. But I taught at Elmwood. I also did theater. I opened my own business. I've taught at an alternative school, which was a huge eye-opener for me. And I finished my career, so to speak, at Spoon River College. I retired in 2015, but then I immediately opened another one of my own businesses, and that's what I do now.
What do you do in your business now?
I do consulting work for businesses. I work with organizations on grant writing. I make presentations for different workshops and things like that based on the things that I learned in my life.
All right, so our next portion is, the gender gap is a generic term used to refer to many of the pattern gender discrepancies between males and females. The gender pay gap is more specifically referencing the gap in pay between men and women, generally a gap of 20 cents on the male dollar per year recently. What ways have you experienced gender inequality? Do you find those differences are more pronounced in rural areas?
Well, first of all, for the first 7 years of my life, I thought I was a boy. I was an only child. I was pretty much raised as a boy. My first presents were baseball equipment. I did not like dolls. And so living in the neighborhood that I grew up in, there were seven boys in that neighborhood and me. And so I didn't really know the difference until they started thinking that there was a difference. I remember specifically one time they made me eat dog biscuits. But as a child and as I got a little bit older, I have to tell you that I was absolutely devastated that I had to play softball. Having been raised on baseball and being a huge, I know a lot of people go, eh, but I am from St. Louis. I am a St. Louis Cardinals fan to the hilt. And I was totally devastated. I didn't understand why I had to play with this ball that was way too big for my hand. And I wanted to be a baseball player. And maybe before I die, we will see a woman baseball player. We're getting closer every day. But there were certain expectations as you were growing up. We had to wear dresses to school. You couldn't go to school unless you were wearing a dress. And to me, that was a very strict way of designating, you are a girl, right? We all had to take home ec. I was horrible at it. Put a hole in the first dress I ever made, burned every dinner that I was asked to make, and still to this day, I am not very good at those domestic type things. And of course, there was the expectation that you would be a cheerleader, which was kind of hard when you auditioned and there were 5,000 students. But there were 20 of us, and we were cheerleaders. And then we had yell leaders, which was that was the male gymnastics team. So again, you know, there's just that constant, I don't want to necessarily call it complete inequality, but it was very designated.
There was a line drawn.
There was definitely a line drawn. So where did I find the most equality? And still to this day, do I find the most equality? It was in music and in theater. Because there, everybody auditioned, everybody, you know, used their talent. And there was a lot more of a creative outlet and a lot more, I don't want to call it tolerance. I think tolerance is a terrible word. It means that you're just thinking somebody's okay. It seems to make you think like you're better. But it was just more open. So that's kind of the way that I saw the inequality. But my father, who I had a really strange relationship with, he's gone now, but my father always told me to not think of myself as a woman, that I was a woman, but that I could do anything I wanted to as an individual. And so I always bought that. And some of his comments to me, you know, were, well, I am a 24-year cancer survivor. And I remember when I called my father to tell him, by the way, that one doesn't have any gender discrimination. But when I called my parents and told them that I had cancer, I remember to this day my dad's answer. And he said, he was quiet, and then he said, so you're going to live or you're going to die? And I thought about that for a minute. I thought, what a terrible thing to say. And then I went, wait, what he's saying to me is, what are you going to do with the time that you've been given? Which, by the way, is the same thing that Gandalf says to Frodo in Lord of the Rings. So your other part of your question was, do I think there's a difference in rural areas? I don't, except that I found that once I moved to rural areas, it seemed to be more accepted that there might be this gender inequality. And I think one of the places where I saw that the most was at the alternative school, where students came that couldn't succeed in the regular classroom. They were smart. There was nothing wrong with their heads. They were very smart. But I remember specifically some of the girls saying, I just want to get my credits, and I want to get out of here, and I want to get married.
The cultural stereotype has historically been that men are more intelligent, rational, and capable than women. This has been the historical argument used against educating girls first in primary and secondary education. Later, it was used as the rationale for excluding all women from colleges and universities, the first woman we allowed entrance only a little over a century ago. How has your life been impacted by gender stereotypes or stereotype threat?
Yeah, yes. And if you look at history, most of the groups that are in power use that same argument, whether it's gender discrimination or it's ethnic and racial discrimination. They try to say that group is not as smart, or that they need protection. So, you know, they want to keep them safe. I think I'm going to answer your question, and I hope this is okay with Mr. Brewer, because I have a Me Too story from the Me Too movement that you're hearing about so much. And I think that this, more than anything, might describe my experience with that. When I was 21 years old and I was going to the University of Missouri, I dropped out for 3 years to work full-time so that I could finish school. And I worked, again, as a legal secretary in Columbia, Missouri. We were on the third floor of this building, and I worked for two wonderful attorneys. The name of the firm was Oliver and Walker. And they were wonderful to me. But down the hall, about four doors down, was an older attorney. As a matter of fact, he was 80 years old. And he was considered reputable, and that he had, you know, he had great experiences. He was an attorney that you could win with, and so on. And one day, the two attorneys that I worked for were both in court, And I was alone in the office, and the 80-year-old attorney came down to talk with me. And I thought, well, this is somebody that's highly respected. And so, you know, okay, I'll talk to you. But I was only 21, which is, you know, not very worldly yet. So he came in, and I stood up, and he started talking to me about a case. And he kept talking to me about a case, just as any attorney would do, when all of a sudden he took both of his hands and he reached out and put them on my breasts while he continued to talk to me about the case. I was, first of all, in shock. I thought, how could a man do that and just keep talking about a case? My next thought was, I'm going to deck him. But then my next thought was, he's 80 years old. What if I kill him? Right? It was a horrible, horrible moment. And I remember all these thoughts going through my head. And I thought, this wouldn't happen if the attorneys were here, or this wouldn't happen if there were a man behind this desk. You know. So I didn't do anything. He just finally went away. And I sat down and I'm shaking, right? But then my two attorneys come back, and they happen to be extremely honorable men. And so I took a risk, and I told them what happened. And the two of them talked a little bit, and then they told me they'd be right back. And they went down, and I don't know what was said, and I don't know the conversation. But I do know that 80-year-old attorney never walked into that office again when I was there by myself. So I had lots of different feelings about that. You know, what do I do? How do I handle it? Does my job depend upon this? Was it right for me not to do anything and just simply tell and have two men take care of the issue with me? So I really began to understand, and I have a real appreciation for the numerous women right now who are coming forward to talk about how this gender inequality comes sometimes from the sexual harassment discrimination that they receive. And so that is my Me Too story, which is a very bizarre one, but it happened many, many years ago, over 4 years ago.
Do you think it's more like based on generation for stereotypes, or more like individuals, like personal values? Do you think like the generation, like mindset and like the movements affect, like, say, like something that happened, like you said, 40 years ago, like, do you think the same thing would happen today in like this day and age and generation, or do you think it was more common back then?
Well, first of all, that's an excellent question. I don't think it was necessarily more common. I think it's been happening forever. But because of the time period, and because we'd just come out of the 1950s, where everybody thought that every family was Leave It to Beaver, if you've ever heard of that, you know, just a really nice, you know, dad works, mom wears a dress when she cleans and vacuums, and the children are perfect, except for they get into little problems like stealing a frog, you know. And I think that because there were such tremendous stereotypes of what the families were really like, that stuff got swept under the rug. I do this presentation on the history of women in work, and there have been a lot of brave individual women who have not just withstood sexual discrimination but bodily harm. It's always amazing to me that we were the last class and group to get the right to vote in this country. As a matter of fact, we haven't had it even for 100 years yet. We're getting close. But I think that it's very important that women like you, at your age, understand the history and what women have been through, so that you never take for granted that you're always going to have those rights, or you're always going to be able to you know, withstand the discrimination. And I'm very encouraged, because a lot of what's happening in the women's movement right now is your generation, and the marches to make people aware, and that's probably step number one. We have to be aware. We have to believe, you know, when people tell us that there's gender discrimination or there's gender harassment and so on. We also have to believe that there's a great number of men who are not doing that. But we need to be supportive of each other and continue to take strong stances and know that we're taking a risk, but it's worth it.
Our previous interview with WIU's Professor of Women's Studies, Dr. Lori Baker Sperry, explained several ways she has experienced gender differences in her life. For instance, growing up, her traditional family expected her to wear dresses and skirts to school, and no makeup or heels. She also was expected to do dishes, laundry, cook, etc. While her brother did none of these growing up, there was also an expectation that she was not strong academically or college-bound.
As a parent, she observed differences in the expectations society has about herself and her spouse concerning maternity leave or taking off work when a child is ill. At work, she is expected to exhibit feminine characteristics on the job, even though workers are not awarded for femininity. She receives comments on students' evaluations that remark on her dress and appearance, and the vast amount of her superiors are disproportionately male. Have you experienced gender disparities in terms of growing up as a parent or at work? Have you received comments about dress, appearance, etc. in the workplace? What is your experience with superiors in regards to gender and opportunities for promotion?
Okay, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I could start with a story. Back in 1986, I left education because I was selected to be the Canton Area Chamber of Commerce's executive director. So a young female, I was following a pretty long list of men in that position. At the time, I was cute, and I had really long, thick hair that I wore, like you guys probably have never heard of Farrah Fawcett, but there was the old Charlie's Angels show, and in the 80s, and the big hair thing, and all of that, I was poised for my age because of the theater stuff, right? And I remember that one of the first tasks that I was given was to raise $60,000 to buy the property on which the Illinois Correctional Center now sits. We had to buy that and present those funds to the governor. So that meant that I spent a lot of time on television, a lot of time on the radio, a lot of time in the newspaper. And I received in the mail an anonymous card from someone, and I knew that the card came from a woman because it said something about that I looked too much like a model to be considered some kind of a professional, and that I should not wear my hair that way, and that I should cut back on my makeup. And so that's an experience where one woman was not supporting another woman and actually creating some of that tension and so on that went into the discrimination or the different thoughts. This is also where I'm going to talk about, and Mr. Brewer just left the room, so you'll have to tell him this story. But when I first went to Elmwood High School to apply for a teaching position, I was a social studies major. I loved history. I love everything about sociology and what makes the world tick and what we've learned in the past affects the future, all of that. I was so excited about it. And I graduated from college mid-year, so I knew I probably wouldn't get a teaching position right away. But there was a secretarial position open at Elmwood High School, or in the school district, and it was with the superintendent. So I sent in my application, and I sent in my resume, and I waited about 2 weeks, and I didn't hear anything. And I thought that was weird, because I thought, well, I'm highly qualified for this position. So I called the superintendent, and he said, well, we threw your application away. And I said, why? And he said, because you're overqualified. And that was the first time that that had ever happened to me. But I continued talking with him, and I said, I tell you what, I'm not going to be able to get a teaching position, but would you consider hiring me as your secretary and then consider giving me a teaching position when one would open up? And he did. He took a chance on that. And it was very funny then because the principal came down after about 3 months and he said, I hear that you're very active in theater. And I said, yes, I am. He said, we need a drama instructor. We need a drama coach to put on the plays for us. He said, would you do that? And that was going to be in addition to being the secretary, okay? So I did. I took that position and did the theater. But then they came to me and they said, now we're not going to have a social studies position open for you. I said, why not? And they said, well, you're not a football coach. It seemed that, and it still seems, that if you're a social studies teacher, you must also be a football coach. So what did they do? They told me, they said, go back, get 9 more hours in English, which has always been, traditionally considered a woman's teaching position. Go back and get that because we're going to have an opening next fall. So I made a trade-off. I went back, I got those 9 hours, and I got to do theater and English, but I never got to teach social studies because I was never a coach. So I think that that's one way. Another way that I have been able to avoid some of the inequality is by opening my own business. And I did do that. I got out of education for a while, and for about 10 years, I co-owned a business called Event Managers. And we did rock concerts at the Madison Theater. We did plays at the Apollo. We put the stage down at the CEFQ stage down on the riverfront and had a lot of concerts and things there. So sometimes you have to be really creative to prove that, gender inequality doesn't matter. And one time I served as an administrator and 3 of us had the same titles, but I was receiving about $10,000 less than my two male counterparts. But again, I was very fortunate that one of the men brought that to the forefront, and eventually they rectified that and made it equal. So speaking out can be worth it as long as we don't get to where we're attacking people and we spend more time making sure they're aware of it.
So you find it more, or at least easier, to take care of a situation when you have others backing you up, whether they be male or female, instead of attacking the situation?
That is it. That is exactly right. You have to have some faith in yourself. You have to believe in yourself. You can't just go in and say, I deserve this because I'm a woman. You have to make sure that you have the education or the experience or the plan in place. But we all need each other. And it's been encouraging to me that that men have often come up in my life to make sure that I had the support I needed from the male-dominated side. And I've always had some really fine women that I've worked with that would band together and we would stand together on certain issues.
Our last question concerns advice you'd give young women. Dr. Sperry said, women obviously need to understand the patterns and work to mirror these trends for themselves and others. As long as these stereotypes and patterns exist for men and women, women and girls must realize that they have to take action in their own interest. For instance, she says that it is not wise to ask if a company that is hiring people that look like you, but ask rather if they are promoting people like you. And finally, one of those most important things a woman can do if she marries is to marry an equal partner. Adding to this, what advice do you have for young women today, especially those growing up in rural areas like us?
Well, I really liked her comment about once you are going for a position to ask if they are promoting. Because sometimes women do get hired into positions, but they're overlooked as the career goes on. But I think I'm going to go a little more basic. I believe that the way for women to continue to get ahead is education, education, education. We need to never stop learning. As a matter of fact, now that I've retired, I'm back in graduate school for the third time. And this time I'm doing it for me, not doing it to get ahead in a career, but I don't want the last 30 years of my life to be spent watching TV. I want to have some of those fun times, but I still feel like, I have some things that I can share. Another bit of advice that I would give women is that don't believe the fairy tales. Fairy tales are nice, but it's a misnomer to think that that your life is going to turn out with rainbows and unicorns and that there won't be any bumps in the road. So have the fairy tales as something to aspire to, but don't believe that they're going to, Snow White had to eat that apple, right? And we fell over dead. So we need to do that. Other advice is that I think women need to plan. And I think they need to have this linear plan in mind, knowing that there's going to be all kinds of bumps and roads in the road and so on. But, education and then thinking about your career. And I don't mean just a job, but what's your career going to be? So you get that education, you get that career established. Marriage if you want it. If you don't, that's okay too. But to go on with what the doctor said, to get that equal partner, you have to be equal, right? So and then family. And I see, so many people that their plans are different than that. That they already have children before they look toward their career. Nothing wrong with that. But my suggestion is that you make sure that you can take care of yourself. Because going back to the alternative school, when all those girls wanted to do, they would tell me is have babies, get married, be in love, and have babies. And that is wonderful, right? But I would always tell them, make sure that you can take care of yourself, because you never know what might happen to that other person in your life. And you have to be able to pick up those pieces and make a living and carry on and that sort of thing. And my line is always, plan as if you will live forever and live as if today's it. And if you do both of those things, then you're going to enjoy the moment to moment, but you also have some kind of plan. That doesn't mean that it can't change. Don't accept negative gender language. Don't. You don't have to be rude or smack anybody or punch them in the nose. But you can say, I find your language a little unacceptable. And sometimes that will start a conversation with somebody that has no idea that what they just said is something that they heard, at home 100 times or something. They just haven't had the chance to think about it. Don't accept other people's perceptions of you. That's another bit of advice. You need to be yourself. And one of the things that I hate most in the world is mediocrity. Settling for, oh well, it's just a small town, or oh well, I'm just a girl, or oh well, there's no oh wellism that is it is productive for anybody regardless of gender. Always think that there might be an alternative. When you get boxed into a corner, look for those alternatives, look for those detours, but make sure you get back on the road, because it may just take some time. And my last advice to you guys specifically is pay attention in Mr. Brewer's class, because he does know some stuff.
My name is Brianna Gorsuch. I am currently a junior at Cuba High School. This past week, I had the opportunity to interview Ms. Davis. Ms. Davis brought up some very valuable points about gender inequality. She even spoke of her own personal experiences throughout her life. From this time, I can say Ms. Davis' generation isn't much different from my own. We still experience stereotypical inequalities in the workplace, the social world, and at home.
My name is Caitlin, and I'm currently a junior at Cuba High School. I recently interviewed Connie Davis in an interview about gender equality throughout her generation. During this interview, I found that various generations often face the same issues. However, we as individuals define our generation. At any age, I found that you have to go against the social norm to help define yourself. It's important for our generation and future generations to look to the past. Previous generations dealt with similar experiences to what we face now. I think it's important to learn from the past and decide on the best course of action for ourselves.
So awesome interview. Just thank you very much to Brianna and Caitlin for letting us share this talk that they had. And thanks to Carol Davis also for taking the time out of her crazy schedule to share her story with us. If you have any questions or would like to share your thoughts about this episode, please connect with us online at www.forgottoniaproject.com or through our Forgot Tonia Project Facebook page. Forgot Tonia is produced by students and teachers at Cuba High School located in Fulton County, Illinois. The foundation of our project is Illinois Social Science Inquiry Standard No. 9, which seeks to apply democratic strategies and procedures to address local, regional, or global concerns and take action in or out of school. We hope you listen in next time to our little Forgot Tonia project.